Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you'll learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlatnik. Today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Javier Hinojo. Hi, Javier.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. Javier is a brother from the Collective Genius Mastermind. And where are you based? Where is home? And could you tell the folks a little bit about you, your family, kids, cats, dogs, wives?
Sure.
I don't know. Whatever works.
Girlfriends? No, I'm just kidding. Oh, my wife's going to see this. She's going to kill me. So I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina. That's where I'm based out of. I'm actually hanging out in Cancun here for the week. I've been married 23 years. I got 5 kids. I got a dog. Her name's Cash Out Refinance. That's her name. And we call her Cashy for short. The kids got to pick the dog. I got to pick the name. So I don't like to think inside the box. I like to think outside the box. That's my personality. And I've been doing real estate a little bit over 6 years. For the first kind of 4.5, I flip a lot of houses. Used to flip about 50 a year. And then I switched over to multifamily about 14 months ago. I sold my whole portfolio, sold all the houses. I quit and just started multifamily mobile home parks. Still waiting for my first self-storage unit.
Well, that's kind of interesting. So thank you for sharing. I love your dog's name. Cash Out Refi, that's really cool. That makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
There's a good old expression, real estate, refi until you die. So
there you go. Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
They love the idea, especially now the interest rates are lower. They dropped and this strategy has worked forever. As long as the interest rates continue to drop, there's always an opportunity to refi.
It's like free money, you know, 3% interest. It's like free money.
Yeah, close to that. That's great. So let's talk a little bit about multifamily. What do you see and why are you trying to jump all over? So obviously, single family is a different business.
Yeah.
If you got into multifamily, are you not able to find quality deals going forward? Because every asset class you're going to go into is going to require some level of special knowledge. So if you're jumping from multifamily to self-storage, how the transition is not easy. It's almost like there are a lot of great and shiny objects, but if you're not a specialist, if you're not, you know, jack of all trades, you're master of none.
There you go. I love that saying. You're right. It's a challenging transition, right? If I think it's a challenging transition, if you don't have the right mindset, right? If you have I believe that's just my opinion. Everything I say is my opinion, right? Let me disclosure, my opinion. So, you know, if your mindset is like, hey, I need to learn everything there is to learn from A to Z on multifamily. Hey, that's great. That doesn't work for me, right? I don't want to go out and learn A to Z. I prefer get around a good team that knows a lot of the bits and pieces of business. And then I can just come in and be like, okay, where do I fit in, right? What am I good at, right? Am I good at raising capital? Am I good at deal flow? What am I good at? I hate analyzing property. Going to a spreadsheet, it hurts my brain, right? I don't want to underwrite. You know, can I underwrite? Sure. Do I want to do it? No. So we got a director of acquisitions. We hired him full time. He's on salary and he makes 30 LOIs a week, right? I don't need to know how to underwrite. I don't need to know every single market, the job growth, the cap rates. I don't need to know that. I don't want to know that. You know, that's not my job. So yes, it is a challenge to transition. It's a challenge. I believe if you try to do everything on your own, it's a team sport here. It's a team business. Connect, partner with people who've done it before, you know, they walk through the minefield, so why not walk behind them, learn it, observe it, say, I want to do that, I don't want to do that, and then do it better. So it's actually not that hard, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's actually a great philosophy. I happen to agree with you on the fact that you need a great team, especially in commercial real estate, no matter what you do. It is a game of specialization and game of experts. And having competent underwriters, competent marketing folks, and then competent capital raising folks, they're all... Yeah. Combine is what makes investing possible.
Yeah. You got to have 18 players, right? So you got to have a great insurance guy. You got to have a great broker who can help you get your loans, go bat for you, you know, make the project look super pretty. You got to be able to raise capital. You got to be able to ask all this stuff, even finding a deal, finding the money, all that stuff. That's actually not the hardest part. The hardest part is actually doing the asset management. Once you buy it, trying to stabilize it or whatever your model is, right? That's the challenge. So you got to have a good team that loves to do that, loves numbers, loves to kind of get deep down in the weeds and grind it out, you know, on a day-to-day basis to make the property, you know, the project successful. So it's a team sport. It's a team business for sure.
Yeah, that's there's some great wisdom in your words from the point of view that project success, especially on a value add, is heavily dependent on the success of the execution of the value add strategy. Yeah. And that is critical.
Yes.
So having competent people to manage it and to oversee it is a secret recipe. It is the secret sauce. Without it, you could do a great job acquiring the asset. You could do a great job getting them financed. Yeah. But if you can't execute on the strategy, you're just going to fail. That's one of the major risks, is the execution risk.
That's right. So,
yeah, I'm actually glad we're talking about this, because we continue to look at new deals, and always this is one of the most important considerations, is what's the ability to execution risk is humongous. It just makes the difference between success and failure is in the execution. People who are brilliant marketers, let me put it this way. I've seen brilliant marketers who know how to sell a deal, but they fail because their specialty is marketing. They don't have a strong property manager, construction director. It's a very difficult task to get the project where it needs to go.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's talk a little bit about this. Who do you have on that side? Do you have a great property manager? Also, are they local? You are in Raleigh, North Carolina. Where are you looking for assets? Just curious.
All right.
Where is the properties? What are the best opportunities? And how do you manage them if remote?
Number one is we got to get a great purchase price, right? And number two, operations needs to be, the operations side needs to be, easy or not super challenging to run, right? Like as far as somebody boots in the ground, competent, property management company and a great construction company, right? So that's kind of the operation side. So for us, number one is a purchase price. So we find a great deal, find something in Louisiana somewhere where we don't have any projects. Okay, do we have a good person locally that we can trust and be boots in the ground and they have eyes on it, a couple times a week? Yes, we do. Okay, great. Do we have a competent property management company that we worked in the past or comes highly recommended from our friends or contacts that are extremely successful? They've been doing this for a while, and I could reach out and be like, hey, Mike, who do you know that can help me out property management in this town? And you're like, hey, hooked it. I've done work with these guys. They're good. Awesome. That's what I want. I don't want to be on the phone calling property management companies. The best is from your peers, get referrals from them. So that's basically our thought process. Great. We want to buy in Atlanta. We want to buy in Dallas, right? We want to buy in all those great markets, but I don't want to buy in Dallas at overpriced. I don't want to do that. I'd rather buy in a two city, right? In a smaller city with a 200,000 MSA, but get a killer. A great deal. Right. It might not appreciate so much. We don't structure our deals to make money when they appreciate. We structure our deals on the value add where it'll make money, because we force the appreciation.
Yeah. Great comment. So let's explore them a little bit.
Yep.
So I have one general comment and observation in my experience, and this varies, obviously. Most property management companies, external, not in-house, over time, performance degrades, gets worse for the reason that kind of at the beginning, it's like a dating game. Once you get married, you actually get to learn some of the challenges. Now, some relationships survive for a long time, some don't. But everything I've seen, just over time, they're all good at getting you on board and things run well for a while. And then later, when things get complacent, they essentially need to monetize their relationship. And then they start kind of overcharging, overbilling.
Yeah, of course.
So that is a considerable risk. I don't know if you had to deal with it. And then the second big question is, how do you find good deals today? There are a lot of people searching for good deals, especially if you're going into these kind of hot market. They are appreciating market. Everybody wants to go into Dallas. Everybody wants to go into kind of Atlanta and a number of other markets. But finding good deals is extremely hard today. It's almost like, how do you do that?
All right. So go back to the property management, right? It's just, you're correct, right? Court, you date for a little bit and they tell you you're beautiful. You're the sweetest person in the world, right? They tell you what you want to hear. That's why you got to have your weekly meetings, right? Not till the property's stable. You have your weekly meetings and you hash it out. You got to have somebody who's on it all the time, checking the numbers, right? Where's our performance? Spending more money on work orders? What's going on, right? You got to have somebody actively in charge of that in your team. If you're off raising capital, if you're off finding new deals and you leave that to the side, you're going to nickel and dime, by fees from your property management company. Just like if you flip houses, all those change orders you're going to get from a contractor, right? They give you the great price up front or a decent price. And then at the end of the day, you're like, man, I spent 40% more. I spent half, 50% more of my original budget because all the change orders. So you got to constantly be active. You just can't be like once a month, hey, what's going on? You got to be on the numbers. You got to be, on the phone. You got to push these guys. They got to know that you're watching them every day. That's what they have to know, right? So they know they can't, they got to make the money too. I understand. But at the same time, we want to make our money as well. The second question is, how do you find good deals? So, just like everybody else, right? We're reaching out to brokers, to our network. I have a Facebook page. We get some deal flow from there. We have a sales team as well. I believe we have 7 or 8 folks in the sales team. We're calling people all day long, just getting some deal flow. We tell everybody like, hey, somebody finds a deal, we'll partner with you. You need help funding the deal, or if you need someone to sign a loan, you know, we can help you out with that. So that's how we get a lot of our deal flow. Folks, I can't be everywhere. You know, I can't be all over the country as far as searching for deals, but it's people that know me and they know deal flow to us as well, which is kind of nice.
That makes sense. But the question, I guess you're looking for the property from brokers' listings. Essentially, what you're telling me is you're going through and analyzing a lot of listed deals and trying to pick which ones are sort of undervalued based on your criteria. Is that kind of the
if it's listed, like if you can type the address and you can find it online as listed, we don't even touch it.
So you're looking for pocket listings?
Yeah,
the brokers are forwarding, and it's either a listed property or a pocket listing, right?
Yeah, pocket list. Try to find a pocket listing. You know, we call brokers and we're like, hey, I need an off-market property. And they're like, yeah, so does everybody and their grandmother, right? Everybody's looking for off-market. But one of the biggest things is we were able to close 3 projects last year that were during COVID. They were 50%, 60% occupied. And these were like extremely hard projects to get a loan on. But once we close on those, we let everybody know that we, as a broker that we knew, that we talked to in the past, we send everybody an email and consistently send them emails saying, hey, we close on this deal. Hey, we close on this deal. And once they notice, we're like, man, how did these guys close on a 200 unit, 50% occupied in June, right? In the middle of COVID, how in the world did they do that? And all of a sudden the deal flow started flowing in from brokers, right? Because they know that we can close.
That's actually great. Congratulations on having 3 properties in the middle of COVID, acquiring 3 properties. Where are the properties? What is the size of these properties? And then how did you get financing? Who financed? Is it Bridge? Is it bank? Yep. Just curious.
Yeah. So we got one in Oklahoma, in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's 208 units. That one, we got a Bridge financing on that one. And
hard money Bridge, I assume.
It's a local bank.
Okay. Which is a big difference. The hard money bridge versus a bank.
It was pretty good. I want to say it was under 5% interest. I don't recall.
That's phenomenal. I wouldn't even call it bridge. I'd call it, a bridge, but it's decent enough.
Yeah, it was pretty good just because they liked the area. They're local and they knew the asset. And the gentleman that was underwriting our deal from the bank was really, really familiar with it. So it's so important also with our broker that we had, you know, just the relationship they had together. So important to have A team players in your team, because they'll go up and bat for you and pay those brokers their fee, right? They definitely deserve it. And then we bought a 72 unit in a small town. I'm in North Carolina, right outside of Jacksonville, Havelock, North Carolina. It was a 72 unit apartment building. It's a small market, but we bought it for $1.3 million. And we bought it cash, and then we got a loan afterward. And that one too was like at a 4%, 50% occupied, you know, local bank, 4%, 4.25%, something like that. You know, since a 5-year loan, first year interest only. It also kind of a bridge loan, but not really. And they gave us our rehab money. You know, it was such a great loan for us because we got really good purchase price. When they send the appraiser out there to appraise it, it appraised at 3.4.
Wow.
Right. And the next day, so the guy underwriting from the bank and the person that was going to sign, authorize the mortgage, they both drove an hour and a half to look at the property. They thought that it was like a vacant land. They were going to get scammed. Like, there's nothing here. Just no way they got it for 1.3 million. Sure enough, they went out there and they saw that property. They're like, man, this is a good property.
How did you find it? Such a great price.
We called the owner. And she was ready to sell. You know, she's like, hey, I get this called 10 times a day, but you sound like you're very nice. So let's talk. Right. And that was it.
Well, that's fascinating. If the owner has been heavily contacted and they agreed to sell it to you, essentially what you're saying is a steep discount to the fair market value. That is fascinating. Usually there has to be substantial distress.
Yep. It was 50% occupied, but it was a nice property. It was really nice. But our pro forma rents were $725 and we only had it for 6 months. We're already at 775. We've already exceeded our performer rent, and it's not even stabilized or fully remodeled. So that's a great deal.
How are you managing? I guess that one is not too far from you. You're managing rehab locally, right?
Yeah, for sure. We got a boots in the ground. He's actually staying there until it's stable. We got a few, but we got about 8 units to remodel, and one source will come back to Raleigh for a couple of months until we have a couple of other vacant ones, and he'll go back out and kind of supervise the construction.
You have a construction manager, basically?
Yeah, something like that, but just because it was close to home, but I don't want to do that. I mean, I don't want to manage a construction project, but it was close to home. It was a small market, and it was actually a little bit of a challenge to grab some contractors to go out there. I mean, they could go out there, but they were all like 90 days behind, and we didn't want to wait 90 days to get started.
That's a substantial problem today. There's a lot of new construction going on, and skilled construction folks are pretty busy.
Yep.
So, and what was the third property?
It's a mobile home park in Mishawaka, Indiana. I can pronounce that properly. It's right next to South Bend. It's about 10-15 minute drive to Notre Dame University.
I know we're in South Bend. We just funded a project there. Actually, hotel conversion to multifamily. That's awesome. That's a land of opportunity today. Instead of trying to find old, you know, big value add projects conversion can make a lot of sense as an alternative.
Sure. Yeah, that's right. So we bought a mobile home park. It's 116 pads, city water, city sewer. It's about 50% occupied, for $900K, and the rents are like $325 or $375, something like that. That's a great deal.
Sounds like a great deal.
That's a great deal. It's worth about close to $4 million once it stabilizes.
Yeah, makes sense. So yeah, if you can pick them up at such great price, it's the upside is very substantial. So
So that's why I'll buy it in Mishawaka, Indiana, as long as the market will support it. We can get a really good loan on the back end once it's. And we got someone local, one of our investors, also one of our partners in the deal. He lives like 15 minutes from there. And he runs a company of like 30 employees, like utility company. So they know project management, they know construction. So he was local, 15 minute drive there, and perfect situation.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Having boots on the ground nearby, I think is critical. Too many people get into these remote projects. I actually like sponsors and the operators who try to find deals in a given area. Like we have a guy, we have a couple of projects in Indianapolis because you have economy of scale. You could have 2-3 projects. You can move the crews from one to another. You can buy materials in bulk. Yeah. You can buy a lot of kind of that. So you know
how I avoid that, Mike? So say, hey, look, I want to save money on construction. I want to put it in-house, have crews and all that. I just try to get a better purchase price and then pay a professional to do it. You know, if it's going to cost me 200 grand extra, let me just get a $200,000 lesser price and I'll just hire a professional, right? Just because, like, that's for me. We don't have the bandwidth yet to run some project, but it does make sense, right? If I was in Dallas, right, and all I'm buying in Dallas for sure, property management, construction company, construction crews, you can definitely kill it. You know, you can definitely crush it a lot faster. But that's just a tip for somebody. If they don't have those crews, just get a better deal at the purchase to afford to pay for them.
Agreed, right? I mean, it starts the good old rule of real estate. Yeah. You make the money on the buy, not necessarily on the sell. If you get a great enough price, you can always exit it even without doing any work, right? You can flip the asset. Yep. But at the same time, finding that is pretty hard. And everything I'm hearing from you are trying to operate in sort of the smaller properties where the competition is limited. So the bigger the property, the more competition there is, more institutional players. There's economy of scale, obviously, on a bigger property.
Yes, for sure.
The challenge is they're much more competitive to acquire.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I'd rather buy 2-500 units a year than buy 1,000 units. So.
Yeah, it's just it's an observation. So it's actually great. Yeah. I appreciate your wisdom. We have a couple of minutes left. If people wanted to reach out to you, wanted to chat with you, they have some money to invest in a deal, or they want to learn how to do this. So what's the best way to get a hold of you, Javier?
So on Facebook, just my name, Javier Hinojo. It's only me and my dad. You'll see me on there. I also have a Facebook group called $1 Billion Multifamily and Commercial Real Estate. And you can find me on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, just my name, Javier Hinojo. You'll find me pretty much all over social media.
So spell it so people can actually...
Yeah, J like Juliet, A-V-I-E-R. And last name is H like hotel, I-N-O-J-O, H-I-N-O-J-O.
Yeah, I appreciate that because I just want to make sure it's...
for sure.
I'm not a native speaker. I don't know if you're a native speaker or not, but it sounds like... Where are you from originally?
I've been telling people for 20 years that I'm from Ireland and they laugh at me. Right, because I'm like 5'5", and so they're laughing at me. True story, my sister gave me a DNA test a few years ago, and I was 1% Irish, so I was like, all right. So, but honestly, I'm from West Texas, and my family comes from Mexico, and I'm from El Paso, Texas, originally.
Gotcha, I mean, that's pretty cool. Yeah, it's just you know, what's really funny with these DNA tests, and we're out of time, but I mean, some people you could have 1% in your blood, you know, if you had some relatives you were not. You know, just you know, from a local village in the same country that the whole family is born there for many generations, probably have some different blood coming, you know, through, who knows?
Yeah, that's right.
So, all people are brothers at the beginning of time.
That's right.
Right?
You know, yeah, for sure.
So, and sisters. All right. Thank you, Javier. I really appreciate your wisdom. It was fun to chat. That's cool. Good luck to you at finding these great deals. And if you find the next one, reach out. Maybe we'll look at doing something together because we always look at great deals and it's hard to find, obviously. Having economy of scale and ability to manage projects is critical, but it does start with a great deal finding. So for sure.
That's right. Mike, thank you so much for having me on. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Javier.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to bigmikefund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.